This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. More and more of us use our credit cards to pay for necessities like gas and groceries. And as families face deeper debt, financial analysts were startled to learn that consumers are paying down credit cards before home mortgages and car payments. That's taken as a sign that a lot of people are more and more desperate, overwhelmed by high interest rates and the economic slump. We're focusing on credit card debt this hour, how to manage it, how to control it, and how to escape it. Tell us your story. If you're struggling with credit card debt now, if you've succeeded in getting out from under, our number is 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog. That's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Later in the hour, a passenger plane escapes near disaster in Germany, and your letters. But first, credit card debt. Liz Pulliam-Weston, a personal finance columnist for MSN Money, joins us from NPR West in Culver City, California. It's nice to have you back on Talk of the Nation.
It's great to be back, Neil.
And we know that every financial advisor of every stripe says first thing you need to do is to pay off your credit card debt, but so many of us just can't do it.
Yeah, it's amazing. The amounts of debt that people are carrying has been growing, and now they're really feeling it because they don't have anywhere really to turn to get that money paid off. For a while, you could turn to your house and drain that equity to pay off the credit cards. You might be able to turn to a retirement fund, something like that. But people are losing their jobs. Their home equity lines are being tapped out and closed. And so now they're faced with this pile of debt, and they're not sure what to do.
Yeah. And again, that first lesson, what should people do as they begin to realize this is getting out of control?
Well, first of all, retirement savings still has to be the top priority for most people. You need to keep contributing to that 401k, get that match. But number two priority has got to be paying off toxic debt, which is credit card debt, payday loan advances, that high rate debt. And the first thing you have to do is stop digging the hole. You can't get out of debt if you continue to charge on those credit cards. And that's really tough for people. That's part of the ingrained way that we have of spending money. And putting down the credit cards is really, really tough. But it is the first step you've got to take to solve the problem.
Some people just need to cut them up or put them in the freezer or someplace?
Exactly. Just get them out. A few people that I've talked to have memorized their credit card number, so they have to stay off the online shopping sites because they know the number well enough to just type it in and keep going. You have to put a pause button somewhere in your life between the act of thinking about buying something and actually doing it. And that pause button can be a list that you carry around of things that you need to buy or want to buy, and just waiting 3 days, 3 weeks, whatever it takes, something to break that habit between getting the thought of buying and actually doing it.
Let's get some listeners in on this conversation. 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. How do you deal with mounting credit card debt? Our guest again is Liz Pulliam-Weston, and let's begin with Chris. Chris with us from Elkin in North Carolina.
Hello?
Hi, Chris. You're on the air.
Yes. Well, I had a problem with debt trying to sneak up on me. I paid my credit cards every month and never had any carryover or service charges or late fees. And one month I noticed they'd managed to increase the interest rate up to 32%. And this was somebody who'd paid off every month. Luckily, I was able to just cancel that credit card. But I found it a little worrisome that without any notification, they could just raise the interest rate up to a point that it would have been impossible to pay off if I'd had any significant balance on that card.
Is that a common problem, Liz?
Increasingly so now. Bank of America got a lot of attention recently for doubling and tripling people's interest rates, and not because they did anything wrong. They didn't miss a payment. They weren't late with another lender. They didn't max out their credit lines. Bank of America just decided to sort of, you know, just raise their rates because they were having financial trouble.
When I called them about it, they said, oh, you're a good customer. We'll drop you down to a fixed rate of 8% again because we don't want to lose you.
There's been some pushback. They're waiting to see which of their customers notice the change and do something about it. So you really have to be proactive and watch those rates because it's no longer, you know, something that you did that could trigger it. Sometimes the company just changes its mind and just raises rates on you.
And does what Chris did work? I call the company and say, hey, you know, look at my record. I'm okay. You want to renegotiate that rate?
Absolutely. You have to be on top of things. You want to watch everything that's coming in the mail or the email from these credit card issuers, because they can give you as little as 15 days notice and change just about anything they want. So you have to stay alert. And then as soon as you get a notice or notice the change in the interest rate, call them up and do some pushback. If you have good credit, you have options. You don't have to stick with a credit card issuer that's raising your rate to double digits.
Chris, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. And let's go now to Adam. Adam with us from Buffalo, New York.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm actually calling. A fear of credit card debt was instilled in me as a college student by my father. I was really good about it up until very recently. And I don't have an exorbitant amount of money or anything, but I've recently started taking credit card debt and switching it between cards. So I'll get an offer in the mail for 0% APR on the card for balance transfers for 10 months. And I've transferred a balance over and paid on time the minimum balance. And then when that starts to run out, I'll switch it to another card. And I'm just wondering if that is a acceptable or a smart way to sort of go about trying to pay off these debts.
Or carry the debt anyway without running up
a lot of interest
charges. So is this a financial perpetual motion machine?
It could turn into one. Balance transfers are not evil in and of themselves. They are a good way to help you pay down debt if you watch all that fine print, because there's a lot of traps hidden in that and a lot of fees. The problem that's happening now is these low-rate offers are getting harder and harder to find, and you also don't want it to become a perpetual motion machine where you're just bouncing from card to card, because opening those new accounts, transferring those balances can hurt your credit scores, and that can make it harder to find these deals, and you wind up paying more interest on loans that you really need, you know, like a car loan or a home loan. And as I said, they're getting harder and harder to find, so you don't want to find yourself with a great big amount of debt and no good way to pay it off at a low rate. So you should be using the balance transfer offers as a way to pay down your debt, not as an excuse to keep bouncing it around.
Hmm. Okay.
And Adam, after that terror that your father struck into you in college, what made you lapse, do you think?
Well, basically, it was just a series of things. Again, it's not a huge amount of debt for me, but you know, I'm not somebody who owns a house or who's ever, you know, bought a new car. So I try to live within my means, but sometimes it's just not possible. I'm also an artist, so I was trying to supplement exhibitions with the credit card to make sure I could get things done. So, you know, and of course there's a little bit of really irresponsible spending in there as well. I've tried to keep it under control, but it just sort of, in the last maybe 2 years, you know, I moved into a place by myself, so I was paying more rent, things like that.
Hmm. All right. Well, it didn't sound like you're you know, painting the town red or anything.
No, I'm not at all.
All right. Thanks very much for the call, Adam. Good luck.
But thanks. Bye.
Let's see if we can talk now with Debbie. Debbie's with us from Canton in Michigan.
Oh, hello.
Hi, you're on the air, Debbie.
Hi. I was just saying, I'm a college student, and I actually managed to finally get myself out of credit card debt.
Not a girl.
And, It was hard, but with the help of my parents, and it was just, they really showed me how, you know, stopping automated payments was a big thing.
What were you paying off, these monthly payments that automatically come right out of your, off your checking, your credit card account?
Yeah, yep, when I put in, you know, I was paying my credit, or my phone bill, I was paying, you know, just little stuff like that, even like a car maintenance fund, stuff like that I was automatically taking out of my checks, and when I didn't notice that it was there, like not actually having the cash in hand,
mm-hmm.
made me like put it completely out of my head. So I had to learn that for me, the easiest thing to get out was actually to go on a basically strict cash basis. And every time I got my paycheck, I cashed it and put away, okay, here's $100 for a phone. Here's my $100 for gas.
And with a visit to the parental ATM, this all worked out pretty well.
Yeah, I still had to pay it all off by myself. They just taught me how.
I see. All right. Well, that's a valuable lesson. Congratulations. And Debbie, thanks very much for the call. Liz Pulliam Weston, that sounds like the basis of an idea of, hey, why don't you sit down and write a budget?
Yeah, I think that's very important. The next thing you do after you stop using the credit cards is figuring out where the money is going. And somebody like Debbie, who's a college student, might be more comfortable with an online solution like Mint or Wasabi, Quicken Online, that allows you to track your spending that way. It basically gathers the data from your bank and credit card accounts and kind of, you know, organizes it for you. Or you can simply use pencil and paper, the old school way. See where the money's going and see where you can cut back. And her solution of using cash, you know, putting it in envelopes, figuring out what she wants to spend in each category, can really work well for some people. I've also talked to people, though, who said if they have cash in their wallet, it's gone. Hmm. They actually do better using a debit card in tracking their spending, which is interesting. So you have to customize the solution to yourself, what's going to work for you.
Let's talk with Nick. Nick with us from San Antonio in Texas.
Hi, yeah, my family and I consider ourselves credit card fugitives because while we have escaped over $50,000 worth of debt, it seems to be constantly hunting us down, both with new offers in the mail from credit cards and also the ever-present, you know, I guess, temptation to go back on buying things, you know, frivolously.
$50,000 is quite a debt.
It was tough, but the first thing we did is we made a list of all our credit cards, and we found out how much interest we were paying on each one. And the ones with the highest interest rates became our priority. To those, we started looking for offers of, like your previous caller, low APRs, using APRs for a fixed amount of time. And we transferred the balance there to at least get that high interest clock to stop ticking. After that, we took the remaining credit cards, the ones that weren't now transferred to 0%, and we did something that we found online called a cash attack, and that was to make the minimum payments on all the credit cards except for your new priority, the one with the highest limit, and then on that one to send in every ounce of available cash you have towards that principle, and to continue doing that until that credit card was paid off.
And then switch it to the next highest one, yeah.
The phone.
Yep. We're having trouble with your phone, Nick, but I wanted to ask Liz Pulliam-Weston if she thought that's a valuable approach.
Yeah, they call it cash attack. They call it debt snowball. What it means is throwing every available dollar at your priority debt. It can either be the highest rate one or the card that's closest to its limit, because we've discovered that maxed out cards can lower your credit score and cause your other credit card issuers to raise your rate. So sometimes the most important debt to pay off is the one that's closest to the limit. But in general, you figure out the one to attack, you throw everything you can at that, and you make the minimum payments on the others, and then just switch it as you pay those off.
Nick, good luck, and thank you very, very, very much for the call. If your credit cards are about to explode and your interest rate would make a loan shark blush, we've got some advice for you, interest-free. We're taking your calls, 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Credit card debt can keep you up at night. It's amazing how those little pieces of plastic can start to feel like chunks of lead. We're trying to lighten your load with some strategies on how to manage your debt. Coming up, we'll talk about peer-to-peer lending. And our guest is Liz Pulliam-Weston. She's a personal finance columnist, and she's giving some free advice. So give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email address is talk@npr.org. And you can also read what other listeners have to say at our blog at npr.org/blog of the nation. Liz Pulliam-Weston is a advice columnist and author of Deal With Your Debt, The Right Way to Manage Your Debt and Pay Off What You Owe. She's with us from NPR West in Culver City, California. Here's an email from Ed in Miami. Regarding the credit card problems, I've been paying down for quite a while. I don't know whether I should call and cancel the cards after I pay them down. I've heard different opinions about that. Will closing my accounts cause my credit score to become worse than it already is?
Unfortunately, the answer is yeah, probably it will. Closing accounts can never help a credit score, and they can hurt it. So until you are done with your debt payoff, until your scores are in the 750s or above, the FICO scale is from 300 to 850. So until you're in the 750 and above range, I wouldn't close any accounts. It's a bit more of a hassle. You might be worried and tempted to use that credit. If you really can't help yourself, then close the accounts. But otherwise, leave them open.
Let's go to Wanda. Wanda with us from Binghamton, New York.
Hi. Mainly I want to make a comment, and then I have a question. Basically, when you're in a relationship, a marriage or whatever, the situation can become really stressful and unequal. If your partner is racking up the debt with credit cards, and you may have one or two, it makes it that much harder for you to pay yours because you're in it together. In other words, many times when you're talking to the person on the phone and you're trying to, you know, get the situation under control, marriages, that really makes things much more difficult. I mean, I didn't even have credit cards until I was past 35 because I didn't want them at all. Mm. I didn't believe in credit whatsoever. The second thing is, once we went through the first problem with the credit, we got a bankruptcy, and then I had a really good job, he had a decent job, and we were doing better. I got two credit cards. When I got them, I found out that they had fees on them. It was a $300 and a $400 credit card with over $200 fees on it. There was like $50 credit available.
Yeah.
I probably used, on the one credit card, I might have used it about four times for some gas, et cetera, paying on it for probably over 2 years. And finally, my house burnt last year in January, and we ran into a lot of difficulty. The insurance didn't cover everything. We've been putting money back into it. Well, the amount of money that I used on the one credit card could not have been over $100. Well, guess what they sent me a bill for now? $1,400. Huh. It's in collection.
Yeah.
I swear to God, the amount that I paid originally and used on that one credit card, it was very minimal, and I kept paying, they kept adding fees. It was ridiculous. And then a couple of times I was late, and then the fees, I never caught up. They would finally call me, I'd make a payment, they'd call me, I'd make a payment. I mean, I'm not that great at handling this kind of thing, because that's why I never wanted them in the first place, but I got optimistic when we got the house.
I understand, Wanda, but it's easy listening to her account to understand how these things can snowball.
Exactly.
I'm not paying them the $1,400. There's no way. I used barely $100 on the credit card. They're not getting that money out of it.
Well, what she's describing of getting a credit card after bankruptcy, that's when people are the most vulnerable. If you want to repair your credit, you actually do need to get a credit card. I know, but at this point, they were taking advantage of the fact that you didn't realize that you were getting a bad card and then adding the fees on. And the situation now is to the point where they've probably made their money back and then some on you. And now that it's gone to collections, it's been sold probably for pennies on the dollar. Anything the collector can get out of you is essentially pure profit. So there's nothing in this system to slow down the lender or the issuer because they're not losing money. Because at this point, they're probably, you know, have made a tidy profit, even though she hasn't paid what they say she owes.
And Wanda, I think, is also right about the stress this can put on relationships and marriages. Yeah,
enormous. And this is something that constantly comes up. I hear a lot from couples where one couple has taken out credit cards on the sly, hasn't told the other person about it, and they have $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 of debt. And they're agonizing over, what do I do now? Or the other partner's discovered it, and they feel so betrayed. I mean, this is a form of financial infidelity. It's really hard when you've got, you know, people who don't have their spending under control.
Well, where do you go if you're in credit card debt? For help, Chris Larson is the co-founder and CEO of Prosper, which is a peer-to-peer lending site. Users can list loans and bid on them. Chris Larson joins us now from the studios of KQED, our member station in San Francisco. Nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Neil, thanks for having us very much.
Well, let me just ask you a hypothetical situation. Say I've got $5,000 in credit card debt. I'm paying it off at 19%. Can I go to Prosper and say, can I borrow $5,000 at something less than 19%?
Well, you know, Prosper really aims to be really an eBay for credit. So it allows borrowers, somebody who had a $5,000 credit balance, to come to the website. We'll pull their credit, and they're basically telling their story, setting the rate that they are willing to pay, and then it enables any American with $50 or more to freely bid on that listing and bid the rate down. So if you have a good credit or a decent story or something that's interesting for other Americans to bid on, it's a great way to replace that expensive credit card debt into something that's basically a 3-year fixed loan product, which is much more consumer friendly.
And at what rate might that be?
Well, it does vary. It's an open marketplace. We see rates for somebody who with good credit of 7%, and that's for a 3-year fixed, fully amortizing loan, and somebody who's subprime might be paying as much as 30%. Again, it's up to the marketplace to really establish that.
Mm-hmm. And again, these loans aren't coming from you or bankers. These are coming from other Americans.
That's right. And so far, we've had about $120 million that's been traded between individuals in amounts that are about, on average, $6,000, so really replacing credit card balances. And that's with about 600,000 users so far in about 2 years. So we're pretty happy with that.
And how often, this does happen from time to time, where people aren't willing to pay back their loans or can't, how often do people get stiffed?
Yeah, we do have that. Again, it really varies by credit grade. So far, we're running at about 4.7% default rates. You know, we expect that will go higher as we continue to get experience. But you can very easily, as a lender on Prosper, find loans where you're going to be making a good return, 7.5% to 11%, instead of having the banks and credit cards make that profit. So we think it's a good deal for both sides. Borrowers should get lower rates, and lenders, who are just people, should get a better return than they would in a deposit account, for example.
And are those loans guaranteed? In other words, if the consumer can't pay, does Prosper pay back the lender?
So they're all unsecured loans. Now, Prosper does do all the credit checking, and we have the technology to make sure that borrowers are who they say they are. But it's very important for lenders to make sure they bid the right price, and we give them tools to do that, and also to diversify. So it's very typical a lender will make, instead of a single $5,000 loan to a single borrower, maybe 100 $50 loans to 100 different people. And that way you're doing really what the credit card companies do, is building a portfolio.
And spreading out the risk, well. Yeah.
Exactly.
And at those rates also, you're not talking, how low an amount can you loan somebody, $50?
So the borrowers can take out loans from $1,000 to $25,000. We're really aiming at the credit card outstanding balances to replace that. And that's really the biggest use of Prosper. Then again, the lenders themselves, people bidding, could bid in $50 increments. So it's likely a borrower will have, you know, maybe 50 to 100 different people that are supporting them in effect.
So at that rate, how quickly are you growing?
Well, it's been going very well. We tripled last year, and what we're really pleased with is we're really seeing a dramatic increase in the number of sort of prime and very well-qualified borrowers, and we think that's really a reflection of the credit crunch, that these other opportunities, home equity has really gone away, credit card rates going up. So people, are coming now to marketplaces like Prosper really to get lower interest rates, maybe 3 to 5% lower on average.
And there are other places like this. But it's interesting. How did you decide to start this? Did you see this opportunity of this big difference between what the credit card companies were charging people and what people could make a very healthy profit on?
You know, I was involved with a company. I was CEO of a company called eLoan for many years. And what we always looked at in the market was, boy, if we could just create an eBay for credit, really bringing this market to people, let people control this and really let people run the credit marketplace. We thought they could do a better job. And, the technology has just fallen into place over the last couple years, and we were able to build essentially an eBay for credit. And, so far, so good.
So far, so good. Okay. Well, thanks very much, Chris Larson, and good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Chris Larson, co-founder and CEO of Prosper, a peer-to-peer lending site where users can list loans and bid on them. And I was just wondering, Liz Pulliam-Weston, there are all kinds of services that offer consolidation loans and that sort of thing. This is a different approach.
Absolutely. The other processes that have been around for a while include credit counseling with their debt management plans, debt consolidation loans, and debt settlement or debt negotiation. This is something that doesn't involve having to take a lower interest rate or not paying back your full debt. This actually is shifting or refinancing your debt with a private party, or as Chris was describing, hundreds of private parties. Now, you might be able to get a better rate if you have good credit, can get a good balance transfer offer, but otherwise, it's definitely something to look into. It's a way to get your interest rates down so that you can get that debt paid off and you don't have the increased costs or the worry that your rate is going to suddenly pop up in the middle of the loan.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's go now to Anthony. Anthony with us from Detroit in Michigan.
Yeah, hi. I'm a college student. All my school years, I've been paying my tuition out of my credit card. And everything's been perfect, but this year, it's kind of been hard on me because I had a house that had a problem, and I had to use my credit card to fix my house. And I'm down to my max on my credit card to pay my tuition, so I'm thinking, should I stop using it and get a loan to finish? I only got 1 year of college left. or should I just keep doing what I'm doing, using my tuition reimbursement for my job and also paying every month? So I'm kind of stuck here. I'm not sure what to do.
Any advice, Liz?
Anthony, having your tuition on your credit cards is incredibly dangerous, carrying that balance. Because of all the reasons we were talking about, your interest rate could pop up for any reason, for no reason, and you're at the whim of those credit card companies. If you fill out a financial aid form, you can qualify for federal student loans.
I'm not qualified. My income won't allow me.
I'm sorry?
I'm not qualified at all. I can make a loan from the bank. I'm not sure.
No, federal student loans don't rely on income. It's not an issue of financial aid that way. Federal student loans are loans that are guaranteed by the federal government. They tend to be low rate. They tend to be very flexible. And you don't have to have financial need to get them. That's the thing. But you do need to fill out a financial aid form in order to qualify for them. And that's a much better route to go than to put the tuition on your credit cards. Because as you've seen, now you've backed yourself into a corner. You don't have any space on those credit cards, and right. You are at the whim of the credit card companies, which can raise your rate any time. So you want to exhaust your federal student loan options before you look at any other borrowing, including private loans or putting it on your credit cards.
Okay.
Good luck, Anthony.
Thank
you. So long. We're talking with Liz Pulliam-Weston, personal finance columnist, about, dealing with credit card debt. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. John's with us. John calling us from Redding in California.
Hello.
Hi.
I can't hear what's going on here. Anyway, I had kind of a cute story about credit cards. My wife, when I met her, was in debt with credit debt. We got that cleaned up, and then a number of years later, she confided to me under some very interesting circumstances that she had again run herself into quite a bit of debt with her credit card and wanted to know what to do about it. I had her turn the credit cards over to me, and I chopped them up immediately. That's always the first step. But secondly, she had a birthday coming up, and so I threw an all-women's birthday party for her with about 40 of her female friends, great group of people. And I had them all bring either cash or a check made out directly to the credit card company. She started opening her birthday cards and all of a sudden realized what was going on here and got up and gave me the evil eye and thanked everybody. And people got kind of a laugh. And she was not very happy that evening with me. She was very happy about the party. And the next morning, she counted up her money in checks and had about $1,500 to apply to her credit card and actually was quite thrilled, and that's actually the last time that ever happened. That solved the problem.
Well, Miss Manners would be appalled, but I think that's an effective solution, or at least getting a start on credit card debts.
Yeah, well, it's an effective solution, and it embarrassed her into realizing that this is not something she ever wanted to do again in the future. I'm very direct in solving problems, and this worked. And so,
okay, John.
Anyway, thank you for the great show.
And thank you very much for the call, John.
Okay.
Here's an email from Tia. We only use one credit card, an Alaska Air card, that has a fee of $75 yearly. We pay it off every month and use it for the mileage rewards. I received about 2 or 3 free tickets per year. We never pay interest on the monthly total because we pay it off every month. Is this a good idea to use a credit card, or should we not have credit cards at all?
Oh, I love rewards. I love reward cards. And you are exactly the right people to have them, people who pay off their balances in full. It's a great way to get something for nothing, but you don't want to play the rewards game if you carry balances. That's because rewards cards tend to have very high interest rates. So when you've paid off all your debt and you're ready to use credit cards responsibly and pay them off in full, then definitely look for those rewards cards, because it's not just free travel. You can get cash back. You can get free hotel rooms. You can get all kinds of great stuff. So if you're going to use the credit cards anyway and you're responsible about them and you pay off your balance, definitely look for a good rewards card.
Let's see if we can squeeze Fred in. Fred's with us from Phoenix.
Yes.
Go ahead, please.
Neil, I just have a little watch-out idea for people. Watch out for those little notices that come through. I got one last month. I won't mention the credit card company. My policy is to pay every month, all of the amount. I found out, it started out, we have examined your credit card history or something to that effect, and I kept reading it, and it said they changed the amount of time I had from 27 days to 20. Now, let me just give you an example. These people mail their bill from Salt Lake City, and they collect it in Philadelphia. I'm in Arizona. We have, pretty slow mail service. They have cut down the amount of time that you have to respond and pay in full by a week, and you have about a 4 days from Salt Lake City to Arizona, not counting a holiday, and 5 or 6 days to Philadelphia. This makes it extremely difficult for anybody who is traveling with a credit card.
And we're running out of time, so Liz, can you help him out here? What's the reason for this?
Need to help me out. I canceled.
The credit card companies know they can make a lot of money with late fees. They can jack up your interest rate if you're late. They've reduced grace periods from 30 days to 20. The answer is electronic payments. Do it electronically, online bill pay. There's no worries about getting the statement late or paying it late.
Fred, thanks very much for the call. We appreciate it. I'm afraid we're out of time. And Liz Pulliam-Weston, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you, Neil.
Liz Pulliam-Weston's book is Deal with Your Debt, The Right Way to Manage Your Debt and Pay Off What You Owe. She was with us from NPR West. Coming up, if you haven't seen the amateur video of that rough plane landing in Hamburg, well, you probably haven't read enough blogs today. More on that when we come back. This is NPR News.